Turn, if you would, to the final chapter of Isaiah. Verse 18. For I know their works and their thoughts. It shall be that I will gather all nations and tongues, and they shall come and see my glory. I will set a sign among them, and those among them who escape, I will send to the nations, to Tarshish and Pul and Lud, and who draw the bow and Tubal and Javan, to the coastlands afar off, who have not heard my fame, nor seen my glory. And they shall declare my glory among the Gentiles. And here we have a wonderful promise written 7 or 8 centuries, I think, before the coming of the Messiah. A great reminder, a great promise that the one true God would call a people from afar. Now, we know from the Old Testament, from halfway through that very first book, God focuses his saving activity upon one man and from him one nation. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, the tribes, and they move from Egypt back into the land of promise, and there they are, and they are to be a light to the nations, and sometimes they were. I think of Jonah going to Nineveh. He was a brave man. Well, not to begin with. He had a tough call. But the God who called him would provide him with all the strength he needed. He would never ask Jonah to go somewhere without going with him, nor providing the tools with which to do the job. That's another issue. And we occasionally come across various Gentile characters who are brought into the community of the redeemed. I think of Ruth. I think of Rahab. I think of Naaman, who, although he kind of cleared off back to Syria, there was no doubt about it, he had an encounter with the one true God, and Israel was to be this great light. And yet too many times the darkness of the surrounding nations, in fact, was entering Israel rather than the light of Israel entering the surrounding nations. And many times in the book of Kings and Chronicles do we read of kings worshipping the moon and the stars in the very temple of God, the Baals and the Asherah poles being erected and worshipped in that holy land. And Isaiah, among other prophets, beholds the day coming when God would actually exile his own people from that land of promise into a land of idolatry, a land of paganism, a land of oppression. Having longed for paganism for all those centuries, God gave them over. And yet judgment has not the final word. Isaiah beholds a time when some of the people of God will return from that land. And yet in the few verses I read, we have more than just a restoration of one people to its God-given land. We see something far more wonderful than that. In these verses we actually see the Gentiles once more being invited into the great community of Israel. He will gather all nations and all tongues, and they shall come and see my glory. In one respect, that happens at judgment. When God judges the world, the glory of God will be unmistakable. And everyone who has ever lived will be there before that great throne. But I think Isaiah talks not here of judgment. In verse 19, he talks among, I think, of those of the Jewish nation who return from exile, who return from judgment. Who not only return to the land, but actually go out. Now, there are a number of interpretations of this passage. And in our, you know, brief 10 minutes or so, I'm not going to cover them all. But I'm going to tell you what I think is the most obvious and profitable interpretation. Isaiah here beholds the time when men of Judah will do the very thing that Jonah did. And they will go out. They'll go out to the pagan lands and they will take the knowledge and the truth of God with them. And that we call the gospel. I will send to the nations to Tarshish and Pul and Lud. Something that is Spain and North Africa. Tubal and Javan. Coastlands afar off. Who have not heard my fame. Nor seen my glory. Here we're speaking of countries very far away from the land of Judah. I actually believe Britain is included here. I believe we are some of the people who are here described. We are a people far away. We have not heard of his fame, nor seen his glory. I know there are perhaps a couple of people here today who may originate perhaps in the Middle East. I am not one of them. A few years ago I swabbed my mouth and I put it in a little test tube and I paid a fortune for some company to tell me where I'm from. And I'll tell you the answer, you know, please wait with bated breath. I'm something like 90% from Lancashire and Yorkshire. My people have not moved. There's a bit of Danish and Scandinavian, a bit of Anglo-Saxon, a little bit of Irish, but essentially, I am from where I am right now, where I'm standing right now. And my ancestors, when Isaiah was writing, they were worshipping Woden, after whom this day is named. And they were painting their faces blue in his honour. And they were worshipping blocks of wood and stone. And yet all those hundreds of years ago, Isaiah saw the time when Jews in Judah would leave the safety of their lands and with gospel power would go out to all the corners of the world so that people living in darkness and ignorance might no longer be ignorant of God's fame and his glory, that they might lay aside the idols which they've been worshipping for so long and behold the glory and holiness of the one true God. And they shall declare my glory among the Gentiles. And that, I believe, was fulfilled from Pentecost and continues to happen. And that the missionaries, of course, are no longer all Jewish. Most of them are not. And they shall bring, verse 20, they shall bring all your brethren for an offering to the Lord out of all nations, on horses and in chariots and in litters, on mules and camels, to my holy mountain, Jerusalem. And here we have a picture of all these various modes of transport being used. And people with different types of clothing and different colours, with different hairstyles and from different cultures and different languages, coming out of every nation, every tribe, every tongue, coming to Jerusalem to worship the one true God. And as the children of Israel bring an offering in a clean vessel into the house of the Lord, and that the worship they bring, it won't be the tawdry paganism, which is what the Gentiles always brought. When the pagans came to Jerusalem, they brought their filth with them. They didn't take the truth with them, but now there will be a clean vessel. Here is a people who worship God as uprightly as any of the children of Israel ever did. Here we have a God who cares for nations not his own. Here we have a people who spread the fame of their God to a people who do not know him. And here is a God who offers a wonderful invitation, that whether you be on a mule or a camel or a chariot or a horse or whatever, doesn't mention people on foot, but I'm sure there are some. No matter whether you're from Pul or Lud or Tarshish, whether you draw the bow, whether you're from a coastland or a desert, the invitation to come and meet with your God, the real God, the God who made you, the God who loved you. The invitation is there. And shortly we're going to pray. And we know that God does and will save people. We don't see much of it in our country right now, but we know that Isaiah saw it. We are that distant coastland, and increasingly in our country, people have not heard of his fame, nor seen his glory. But we'll pray this evening that we that have will continue to share it, so that the ignorant Gentiles and pagans of our own day may come with us on their litters and their mules when we're invited to that holy mountain to see the Lord. Amen.